This is WBAA. I'm Mike Lowitzo. A team of scientists from Purdue is back from about a week-long research trip in the middle of Lake Michigan. They were studying the lake's currents. Joining me to talk about it is Carrie Troy, an assistant professor of civil engineering here at Purdue. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I'm sure I oversimplified that, studying the currents. But first, let's talk about where you were on Lake Michigan and, again, what you were doing.
We were in the middle of the southern basin of Lake Michigan. Lake Michigan has kind of two basins, a north and a south basin. So we are in the deepest part of the southern basin, which is about 150 meters deep. And the goal of our cruise was to try to get some data that would allow us to better predict where contaminants and other substances in the water are being transported in the interior of the lake. So one of the main things that we did on the cruise was to release a large batch of red dye into the water, and then we tracked that dye patch over the next several days using our instruments.
Basically, you dump it into the lake. It sinks, I'm guessing, and moves about. Mm-hmm. So how do you track it when it's underwater?
We introduce it at the surface of the lake. We try to make it a little bit more buoyant than the lake water itself. And we have an instrument called a fluorometer. And a fluorometer basically uses light to detect the concentration of the dye in the water. And so we had one fluorometer that we had towing behind the boat up and down vertically through the water to get the vertical distribution. And we had another fluorometer mounted to the ship, and when the water went in through the ship's intake system, it would pass through the ship's fluorometer.
So it's actually reading it as it hits it. It's
real
not doing
time.
Any sort of sonar type of...
No. Okay. Yeah, you have to contact the water to actually see it.
So why is this important? Why are you doing this?
The goal is to get our computer prediction models to a point where if we had some sort of an event where you spilled something in the middle of the lake, you could actually predict where it was going and how it was getting diluted and plan your measures accordingly. And the applications are also from the biological standpoint. A lot of the substances in the lake, like plankton and zooplankton and all sorts of things, are just going with the flow, more or less. And so if you're trying to put together complex biological models that involve the flow patterns, this sort of data is really helpful in terms of ground truthing your model to see whether it can predict where things are actually moving.
Now, my guess as someone who's uneducated about it all is that currents in a lake is much different than a sea or the ocean. It's very confined. Is that accurate?
Right.
Or are there similarities?
There are some similarities. So you're right. Lake Michigan is confined. One of the main differences is that in the Great Lakes, as big as they are, they don't really have any tidal activity. So there's no tides of any sort of magnitude in the Great Lakes. But we do have these what are called near inertial waves. And near inertial waves have a characteristic 18-hour period. And during the summertime in Lake Michigan and all the Great Lakes, the currents in the middle of the lake can be so regular that it's almost as though we have tides. You can get currents in the middle of the lake as high as a half a meter per second, which is really, really high for a lake far away from the shore. So the main type of motion that you actually see in the middle of the lake during the summer period is round and round, clockwise moving velocities over an 18-hour period, and that's actually what we saw in our data last week.
So do you have to do this again in winter? I mean, is it weather-related?
Well, if we did it in winter, we would see very different circulation patterns. We would not see that 18-hour pattern. We would see probably more storm-driven kind of motions, a lot more waves. And generally, the boats do not go out in the wintertime in the Great Lakes, even the big freighters. They tend to stay in the harbor until March or April.
Did you learn anything surprising, or are you still analyzing data?
Well, yeah, we looked at the data initially. I guess what was surprising to me, I've never done a big dye release experiment like this. And the amazing thing is, you know, we release this blood red dye into the water, and it's initially very concentrated, you know, only a couple of meters to a side. And then within literally several minutes, it's already hundreds of meters in size. So, you know, I do the calculations, but from an observational standpoint, I was really impressed with how quickly the dye actually dispersed, you know, much faster than we had ever expected. We released this very compact initial distribution, and within minutes, you know, it's huge. And we could drive through it with the boat and not be too worried about mixing it. So that was pretty neat to me. To see how quickly things mix out there.
What was the volume of dye that you released?
We actually mixed it up in a barrel. We did two releases. One, we tried to release it slowly, and that made a sort of a very long patch of dye. And the other one, we said, okay, we just want to get it in as quickly as we can. So we literally hoisted the barrel with the crane and turned it upside down and dumped it in one big patch. So it's pretty shocking to see the red color of the water out there. Made me nervous. The Coast Guard knew, but I thought for sure we were going to get some helicopters or something flying overhead, because it was literally, you know, a kilometer long patch after an hour or so of bright red water in the middle of the lake.
And some people are going to ask, is this harmful in any way to the water? I mean, what is
not,
this dye?
This is called Rhodamine WT, and it's established as a safe tracer for this sort of testing. They use it a lot in, wastewater plants where they're trying to see where the flow goes and things like that. So it's not harmful in the concentrations that we use, but it is pretty shocking to see it by eye because it's so red.
What's next? Just doing the calculations?
So next, we have a lot of data that we're sitting on. You know, we have to put it all together and do sort of a geographic system where we can look at the snapshots of the dye that we get from all these ship surveys going back and forth. And then we try to see how quickly was it dispersing. And ultimately, we're going to try to see if we can model it and how we can get the model to better agree with the reality in order to improve our ability to predict these sort of things.
What was the area of the lake size-wise that you covered?
Chasing this dye patch all around, you know, just looking at the instruments, trying to figure out where it was. Ultimately, toward the end of our surveys, we were, you know, probably 10 kilometers to a side, kind of a square transect.
And were you off the shore from Chicago, Milwaukee? What was it?
We went from Milwaukee. We were about 60 kilometers southeast of Milwaukee. So right in the middle of the lake, although you wouldn't know it because the 4 or 5 days we were out there, we had basically dead calm. We couldn't have asked for better conditions for the experiment, really.
Carrie Troy is an assistant professor of civil engineering, spent a week out on Lake Michigan studying the currents. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to WBAA. I'm Mike Lowitzo.